Welcome to the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Jared. Why are we here, Phil?
We are here to talk about the world's greatest disasters. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God's fault.
I just want to make it clear to everyone who's listening that it's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rates that's going to be involved in some of these disasters. We're just interested in talking about what went wrong. And to be honest, I mean, if it came on the news, you'd be interested too, wouldn't you?
I'll be straight on there, Sky News 24/7.
And what are we starting with?
The Hindenburg airship.
The ill-fated Hindenburg on her last flight sails over New York. These pictures, made from a Pathé News plane less than 4 hours before the tragedy, show the world's largest airship heading for Lakehurst, New Jersey. Over Newark's famous auto skyway, the airship was hailed by thousands who little dreamed it was their final glimpse of the Hindenburg. Inside the silver envelope are 16 separate gas bags, each filled with hydrogen, a highly inflammable gas. From the ground, you can see the forward control cabin from which the ship is operated. The windows along the side indicate the location of the passengers' quarters, in which many were carried to a flaming death. Approaching Lakehurst, the Hindenburg appeared a conquering giant of the skies, but she proved a puny plaything in the mighty grip of fate. It almost seemed as if fate had set the stage for the horrible tragedy. A graceful craft sailing serenely to her doom.
Yes, good to start with the Hindenburg, isn't it? Because the Hindenburg kind of is the iconic disaster, isn't it? That's
yes.
The thing that you think of. I mean, it's the first thing we thought of when we thought about putting a picture together for this podcast.
Only disaster that's ended up on a Led Zeppelin album cover.
What was it, Phil?
It was the crash of Germany's largest and most prestigious airship at the very end of a transatlantic crossing from Frankfurt in Germany to New York in the USA.
When did it happen?
It happened on May the 6th, 1937, at the Naval Air Station Lakehurst, New Jersey, which is just outside of New York.
How many people died?
36. Okay. 35 from the airship and one poor fella on the ground. But 97 people were on board the airship. In total, so 62 people survived.
I assumed nobody survived because it is a fireball.
Mm. Between the ages of about 10 and 13, 14, I was obsessed with airships. I read everything. I even got a special dispensation to go and visit the home of the British airship industry in the 30s, which wasn't open to the public. But yeah. My dad wrote to them and said, look, my son is just so it. Can I? I was obsessed. I read everything. And the weird thing is that doing this podcast, I mean, I haven't really looked at those facts for about 30 years, but they all just came back to me. I hadn't forgotten any of them.
Well, was you said between the ages of 10 to 13?
About 10 to 13, yeah.
So it's interesting because it's the sort of period in a boy's life when he's sort of learning to socialise, you know, discovering girls, you know, that sort of thing. He's sort of burgeoning, turning very slowly into the first sort of throes of adulthood.
Yeah.
And you were looking at balloons, big balloons.
I was looking at big balloons.
Big balloons and that.
Reading about disasters.
Do you think that's informed your life?
So I think it's...
It has. I'm telling you it has.
I'm happy with a book on airships and standing in a pub talking to strangers.
What is it about airships that really...
Oh, they're huge!
But other things
great,
are huge.
Big... No, not as big as airships.
Really?
Airships are the biggest man-made thing to ever fly. Now, do you want feet or metres?
What metres?
Metres. Metres. Hindenburg, 245 metres long.
Oh, God. Feet.
803.
What's
right?
that, then?
Okay, come on, then. Right. Right, Wembley football pitch, yeah?
No.
No, come on. You must have an idea.
I've not been to a football match ever.
You must know.
I saw Brighton and Hove play another football team 10 years ago.
All right, well, think of the pitch.
I can't. That's what I'm telling you.
I've only got a football pitch analogy.
What's the football pitch analogy?
Well, take Wembley football pitch, yeah?
Right.
And then put another pitch next to it. Two Wembley football pitches. Hindenburg was longer.
but how much longer? So we're saying that it was longer than something that's already long.
Yeah.
Okay.
29 buses.
29 buses?
Four Boeing 747s lined up.
Jesus Christ.
These things were enormous. Height.
Yeah.
I'll give you metres again. 41 metres. That's the same height as two Angels of the North on top of one another.
Wow.
Or 23 Gary Linekers placed on top of one another.
How many? That's interesting. How many Gary Linekers?
23.
23 Gary Linekers.
He's a tall man.
Is he?
I don't know.
So a skyscraper sort of size?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, the yeah. Well, that's a very good
block
analogy.
Of flats.
Yeah, the Hindenburg in length would have been just a tiny bit shorter than the main Canary Wharf tower.
Fucking hell!
Yeah,
yeah, and they filled it with fucking gas.
Yeah, there was only seven million cubic feet of inflammable hydrogen in it. What could go wrong?
That is amazing, isn't it? Because we're in such a risk-averse...
Yeah, don't drive 35 in a 30, but we'll put 7 million cubic feet of inflammable hydrogen in a balloon that you can sail in.
Were they inside the balloon or hanging underneath?
Well, the Hindenburg was unusual in the sense that they were inside the balloon.
They were inside with the gas?
Mm.
They were like a little bubble inside... They were in with the gas.
They were in with the... Well, obviously, they were shielded from the gas, but they were in with it, yeah. But most airships have something underneath called a gondola. And in older airships, everything else was in the gondola, like the sleeping compartments, the... Blah, 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 blah. But in the Hindenburg, it was different. They had the gondola, which was where they controlled the flight, but the passengers were actually up in the structure.
So when it caught fire, they were inside the balloon?
Actually inside the balloon, yeah, which is... one of the reasons why it was very difficult to get out.
What is an airship?
Well, an airship, Phil, it's a type of aircraft, yeah, that gains its lift from large gas bags that are filled with a lifting gas which is lighter than the surrounding air.
Right.
So obviously, hydrogen, for example, is lighter than air.
Right.
So if you fill something with hydrogen,
yeah,
it's going to lift.
Goes up in it.
Yeah. Now, there is a problem with hydrogen.
Yeah.
Highly flammable. Helium,
yeah,
also used.
Yeah.
Less flammable, yeah, virtually non-flammable.
Really?
Yeah, but slightly heavier.
Makes your voice squeaky.
Yes.
Is that a problem in air travel? Squeaky voices? People won't respect pilots?
Now, during the golden era of airships, which I think you would argue is probably the 20s and 30s.
I certainly would argue that.
Yes. The USA,
yeah,
was the only country producing helium.
Right.
So all US airships used helium.
Yeah.
Safer. Didn't stop them crashing, though. Even though the USA used helium, non-explosive, the largest ever fatality in an aircraft crash was an American airship. That's another thing.
Well, what's that one, then?
That crashed into the sea.
How many people died in that?
73 people died on the USS Akron. So hydrogen, bad.
Yeah.
Man's inability not to drown, even worse.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Three types of airships, essentially.
Okay.
You've got something called a non-rigid airships, yeah?
Right.
These are the ones you see today. So when you're looking at you're on TV and you see a blimp above a football stadium,
yeah,
or you'll see advertising, they're called non-rigid. So the internal pressure within them maintains that shape.
Okay? So it's a balloon.
Essentially a kind of a balloon, yeah. You've got semi-rigid airships. So you don't really get those anymore. They sort of have their shape maintained by the gas, but there is a degree of structure in there to kind of give it a sort of semi-fix. They're really boring. I don't give a toss about them.
Okay.
Rigid airships.
Right.
These are the interesting ones. These are the big mothers. These are the disaster-packed Goliaths that we all think of that have caused so many flamey deaths, right? Now, these, right, they have an outer structural framework, normally made out of aluminium, which maintains the shape of the craft. Now, they cover that with a sort of tarpaulin-type thing, is stretched over that structure. And within that structure, the gas is contained in internal gas bags. Now that is your Hindenburg, that's your Graf Zeppelin, that's your British R101, that's all your big ones.
Oh, so it's not like a cigar shape filled with gas. It's
no.
That sounds less dangerous.
Sounds less dangerous, but I think we've got the photographic evidence to prove that was not the case.
Certainly isn't less dangerous.
With the Hindenburg. Right, okay, so these big rigid airships, commonly used until about 1940, okay, but their use decreased over time because their capabilities were getting surpassed by those of aeroplanes, which of course were still new at the time. The decline of the airship was also accelerated by the fact they kept crashing.
And they're kind of like the Betamax of flights, aren't they? Or the mini disc of flights. So they look quite impressive, but actually a shit.
So the decline of the airship. Right. So you've got the 1930 crash of the British R101, 33 and 35 storm-related crashes of the USS Akron and the USS Macon, and, of course, the 1937 Hindenburg disaster.
Is the Hindenburg the last one? Did they just draw a line under it?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
They had another one identical to the Hindenburg being built at the time, and it did then go into service, but they didn't take passengers, and they were like, we've got this, fucking huge airship.
Yeah.
We don't know what to do with it. In the end, he did a few surveillance runs at the beginning of the war over to Britain to have a look at our radar, see what it was like. And then they scrapped it and used the metal for fighters.
Right.
Construction of the Hindenburg. Began in 1931.
Yeah.
Suddenly stopped when the Zeppelin company, surprisingly, went bankrupt.
Okay.
Now, this led to Mr. Hugo Eckner, who was the head...
Oh, so hold on. This is Wall Street Crash, is it?
I think it might be linked to that.
Okay.
Or the fact Zeppelins were shit. One of the two. I don't know.
I think that if you have a shit product, then that really... Then you're really buggered if there's a stock market crash.
Yes.
Because suddenly people go, eh, I don't think I'll buy Pogs anymore.
Anyway, so old Hugo Eckner, this chap, right, he was the head of the Zeppelin company at the time. He made a deal with the Nazi Party.
Oh, the Nazi Party?
The Nazi Party. I've not heard of them before. We've never spoken about them.
No.
In any of our previous podcasts.
No.
Essentially, he needed money to build these airships, which the Nazi Party, when they came to power, gave him.
Right.
But in return, he was forced to display the Nazi flag on the fins of his aircraft.
Don't see that on the Led Zeppelin cover, do you?
No, well, to be fair, by the time that photograph had been taken, they were burnt.
Oh, okay.
There weren't anything left of those. Okay. Anyway, he didn't want to do it.
Nazis. Hate these guys.
He didn't like them. Old Hugo Eckner didn't like Nazis at all.
Oh, okay.
But he had to. Had to put the flags on. The Hindenburg was originally designed to be filled with helium.
Mm.
Very clever, very modern. But in the 1920s, the United States possessed a monopoly of the production of helium, and the US wanted to preserve that just for their own airships. So they passed, which I think is probably one of the greatest bills of all time, the US Helium Control Act of 1927.
So if they hadn't been such assholes with helium, then it would never have happened.
No.
So it's America's fault?
Yeah, kind of.
Is there anything that's not America's fault? That's incredible.
Yeah.
The Zeppelin company went bust, right? So he had to get Nazis on board. The Zeppelin company went bust because of the Wall Street crash, America's fault. And then it blew up because America wouldn't give it helium.
Yeah.
Bloody America.
Nothing wrong with Nazis at all in this. No, hang on, I haven't finished the sentence. Nothing wrong with the Nazis in this particular... this particular field at all.
Okay.
In this sense.
But in a wider sense.
In a wider sense,
yeah.
But in this particular construction of the airship.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what
it's sort of like if a serial killer was really good at, if a serial killer mowed your lawn or something like
that.
Yeah, did that very well.
Yeah.
Killed a lot of women. But you can't criticise him on that edging.
Now, to be fair to this old hydrogen, right, this old hydrogen malarkey, gets a bad rap, hydrogen, causes a lot of death. But the Germans, they had extensive experience of using hydrogen as a lifting gas. Now, until the Hindenburg, accidental hydrogen fires had never caused an accident on civilian Zeppelin. So when they found out they had to use hydrogen, the switch for them wasn't too bad. Commercial services with the Hindenburg commenced on the 31st of March 1936 with the first of 7 round trips to Brazil's Rio de Janeiro that season. Hindenburg had seasons, not like today's things which fly all year round.
Yeah.
Hindenburg flew in season, so it had a season between a certain period of the year, a few months of the year, stopped. Started a season.
I imagine because it's windy.
Windy, yeah. In that first season, she also made 10 round trips to New York City. In her first year, the Hindenburg covered 192,000 miles and took 2,798 passengers on board and 160 tons of freight and mail. Now, it was during her second passenger season where it all went a bit wrong.
Okay, after opening its 1937 season by completing a round trip to Rio de Janeiro, the Hindenburg departed from Frankfurt for New York on the evening of May the 3rd for the first of 10 round trips planned that season.
10!
Except for strong headwinds that slowed its progress, the Atlantic crossing of the Hindenburg was otherwise unremarkable. That's a killer, isn't it? Is that if you were on a transatlantic flight, you'd be scared all the way over the ocean. But when you saw New Jersey, yeah, you'd be like, oh, home free.
We're here.
We're here. You'd be putting your coat on. That's the thing that's a killer, isn't it?
Yeah,
you'd have been putting your coat on. You'd been putting your fag out. Hindenburg's arrival into the New Jersey airfield on May the 6th was delayed by several hours to avoid a line of thunderstorms passing over the site. It's looking like this is going to be God, isn't it? So the airship spent a bit of time flying around New York City looking at the sights.
And yeah, but how cool is that? You can go, sorry, guys, we can't land. There's thunderstorms over the landing area, dangerous to land.
Yeah.
Got a few hours to kill. Tell you what I'll do. I'll just fly you next to the Empire State. I mean, you can have a look down on it. I'll just fly you over.
And it went quite close, I bet, as well, because they're going slow.
Well,
they go low.
Originally, so this is a side point, the original design of the Empire State was to have an airship mooring mast on the top.
Really?
In fact, I actually did have it. And they tried it a couple of times, but it wasn't very successful because of the wind up there. So it's just
we used to have balls of absolute iron, didn't we?
Yeah.
Do you know what? There's people out there scared of gluten. But at around 7 p.m, the airship was cleared for its final approach into the Lakehurst Naval Station. So 7 o'clock, they were probably thinking they can go and get a drink.
Hmm?
You know what I mean? There's enough time to go to a drink, check into the hotel. Didn't even have to do a late check-in. They would have been pleased with that. At 7:21 p.m, while the Hindenburg was at an altitude of 295 feet.
That's about a couple of Nelson's columns.
So in the double figures of Gary Lineker's anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
A pair of landing lines were dropped from the nose of the ship and were grabbed hold of by handlers. 4 minutes later, at 7:25 p.m, the Hindenburg suddenly burst into flames and dropped to the ground in little over 30 seconds.
30 seconds. So imagine the countdown clock.
Oh, my God, it's the same time as a countdown conundrum.
Yeah, from the beginning to dropping to the ground.
Jesus.
Nothing, is it?
It's a harsh episode of Countdown, that, isn't it? A few witnesses saw the fabric ahead of the upper fin flutter as if gas was leaking. Others reported seeing a dim blue flame, possibly static electricity, or St. Elmo's fire. That's ball lightning, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
No idea.
I think it's ball lightning, St. Elmo's fire, isn't it? It's a sort of static charge in the air that some people think is UFOs.
And a very bad 80s film.
Several other eyewitness testimonies suggested that the first flame appeared on the port side just ahead of the port fin and was followed by flames which burned on top. Witness statements vary, and that is one of the reasons why today we still can't be totally sure what caused the disaster.
Well, port is left, of course.
So many people were watching it, I guess.
Yeah.
Because it's a big event. Big event coming. So hundreds of people, I guess, watching that.
Mm. Yeah, it's a big thing. It's a big thing. There's no internet, no TV.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You're going to watch a big inflammable balloon land? Yeah, I'd be there today.
Watch it now. I think I'd go along. Huge skyscraper site balloon was going to land near my house, I'd go out and watch it.
That's absolutely.
I mean, I'd take my phone. The time that it took from the first signs of disaster to total destruction of the airship was 90 seconds. In a way, that's okay, isn't it? Because the Titanic, for example, is slow and methodical, horrific. Like, it's you see death coming, you know how it's going to happen, whereas 90 seconds, I mean, at least no sort of a sign whatsoever, huge explosion, you're hitting the floor, so you're either dead or you survived in
Yeah, I
seconds.
Suppose in that, I mean, apart from the 6 or 7 people who had horrific burns and lived in hospital for a good 3 or 4 days afterwards and then died.
Oh, Jesus.
You
Christ,
make a very valid point.
It is a nasty one. And the thing about this one as well is that because it's so iconic, you forget that it's actually a really, really, really horrific way to die.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think the worst way to die, really.
Well, flamey death.
I think that's the worst, isn't it?
I don't know. Flamey death? Yeah, possibly, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad, because the thing about flamey death is you're not just dying through flamey death, you're also dying through inhalation.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Oh, it's a really awful way to go.
Is there a good way to go?
I don't think there's a good way to go, but there's definitely stages of bad ways to go, isn't it? I wouldn't want to drown.
No, that's not supposed to be very nice.
That's bad drowning, I think. But I wouldn't want a flamey death one.
No.
That's a real bad one. One of the most iconic things about the Hindenburg crash was a commentary by radio reporter Herbert Morrison, who described the crash happening live for his station WLS Chicago.
Practically standing still now, they've dropped ropes out of the nose of the ship, and it's been taken a hold up down on the field by a number of men. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it. It burst into flames. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my, get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring mast. And all the folks will see that this is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's 400 or 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the fans are screaming.
Mr. Rogers. I told you. I never talk to people whose friends are on there. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, it's just laid down massive fucking wreckage.
Although he was an eyewitness, yeah, and he talked through the whole disaster, that was not him broadcasting live. That was him recording it for a later broadcast.
Oh, right, OK.
So, actually, the report didn't actually go out until later that night.
Oh, right, OK.
So it wasn't actually, even though he recorded it, it wasn't going out live. And also, actually, another thing while I think about it, if you look at that speech online, it's normally, if you go to YouTube or whatever, there's normally, obviously, footage of the aircraft crashing and him talking.
Yeah.
Now, they were never together. That footage is from a separate source, the radio
thing.
So people have just put that together to make it easier to...
To make it a better product.
Yeah, to make it see. But there was no link between those two, ever.
Despite the sheer ferocity of the fire, and the fire does look horrific, doesn't it?
Like, it's unbelievable.
It looks horrific.
You know what it looks like?
What?
Someone putting a match to 700 million cubic feet of hydrogen.
Many of the crew members and passengers survived, but the majority of them were severely burned.
Mm.
Severely burned probably doesn't cover it, right? Because they were inside the balloon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't want to survive, I don't think.
Ooh,
I think they're the unluckiest, I think. Of the 36 passengers and 61 crewmen, 13 passengers and 22 air crew died. Also killed was one ground crewman. So those guys holding the lines, you see the lines go down, the crewmen, so it would have literally fallen on them.
Mm.
He's only got 30 seconds to get away.
Yeah, that's it. It fell on them, yeah. There's other footage of airships where they've come into land and the ground crew are there holding the thing.
Yeah.
The airship's gone up and taken the ground crew holding onto the rope.
Oh, my God.
And I think it's an American airship called the Shenandoah. And you see this footage going up and then about 100 foot in the air, the guy can't hold on anymore and you just see him drop
Jesus.
To the ground.
These things were fucking death traps.
Horrible.
Oh, God, OK. The majority of the victims were burnt to death, while others died jumping from the airship at an excessive height or as a consequence of either smoke inhalation or falling debris. 9 of the victims actually died in the following hours or days after the disaster, mostly as a consequence of the burns. Like, when you actually get into it, it is really horrific. Mm. Like, in terms of air disasters, it's got to be one of the worst, hasn't it? Like, in the terms of the way that you would die as a passenger.
Yeah.
The newsreels and photographs, along with Morrison's passionate reporting, shattered public and industry faith in airships and marked the end of the giant passenger-carrying airships era. That's got to be a good thing, isn't it? I mean, they weren't going to get better. Do you think there was any point in carrying on?
Well, planes were coming in, weren't they?
And planes are better.
Planes are better, to be fair. I think there's a use for airships. I still think there is a use, and many people are still trying to make them, and in various guys, heavy lifters, they're very good for that.
Oh, right. What, setting fire to forests, raising the temperature of the sea.
Cargo.
Yeah.
Slower than plane, quicker than ship. Yeah. A nice middle ground. And also, cruising. It's like the journey is exciting. Leisurely enjoying fine wines, fine meals, fine company, just watching the world go by at a slow, silent pace. Don't have to get there silent, very little noise in an airship, and knowing it was safe, I think that'd be a nice leisure
thing. That's the thing, though, knowing it was safe. Like, it'd be very, very difficult to eat your filet mignon, knowing you might be incinerated in 30 seconds at the end of the journey.
Well, you wouldn't be with helium.
No, I suppose not.
Look, they've got enough helium now to make excess for kids' parties.
Well, it sounds like quite a good idea then, doesn't
it? Well, yeah, there are some people that are still trying to make them.
Is helium bad for the environment?
Don't know.
Me neither. What caused it? I always thought it hit that telegraph pole.
Looks like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is the mooring mast.
That's the
mooring mast,
So you'd think it'd be able to hit that thing.
Mm.
I thought that was I used to think it was electricity pylons.
Yes, because there's the very famous picture where it's kind of at an angle and then the mooring mast is in front of it.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's hit it. But actually not. No, it's just the way the photograph is. It's quite a way. There's a tiny bit of that mooring mast still there, actually.
But is it?
Only the base of it. We had a lovely mooring mast in Bedfordshire. Got rid of it in the late 40s. Real shame. Lovely it was.
Really?
Yeah.
That is a shame.
Yeah, I'd like to have seen that.
So, yeah, what caused it then?
To be honest, Phil, to this day, nobody really knows.
Right. Is that a bit weird?
Well, you would think with the technology,
yeah,
we would know. But then again, how much of it, you know, how much of it remains, and ultimately, what is the point?
Well, yeah, exactly. You're not exactly going to stop it happening again. Are you just going to draw a line and, and say never do it?
There's
again?
Only one person survived who's still alive from it anyway.
Who's that?
Werner G. Doner, a retired electrical engineer who was an 8-year-old child travelling with his parents, brother and sister at the time of the accident. His father and sister died in the disaster.
But he's still alive.
He's the only last one.
I would love that. I mean, I obviously don't want to go through a disaster, but it would be great to be like, I was on the Hindenburg.
Yeah,
it almost or just it, something.
It also make the nightmares for the rest of your life worth it, wouldn't
well,
it, Phil?
Well, yeah, there's that. That's the thing. Yeah. Maybe not that, but like being somewhere and witnessing a thing, just having something happen in your life, that's all I want. just want something to happen, Phil. God,
I just want to survive a disaster.
You get up, you go to bed, you get up, you go to bed. What is the point?
You hear these...
I've got nothing to tell anybody at a dinner party. We don't even go to dinner parties anymore. That's just a saying.
The only thing I've got to say for dinner parties... I have seen a former Prime Minister's cock.
Whose cock have you seen?
Edward Heath.
How did you see Edward Heath's cock?
I was in a pub and he came in and he went to the urinal. I said to my mate, I'm going to go to the toilet because this is the only chance I'm ever going to have to say that I've seen an ex-Prime Minister's cock.
It was premeditated.
Oh, yeah.
It was premeditated.
So I stood at the urinal and I looked over just so I could say I've done it. And I never spoke, didn't speak to him.
No, I bet. Yeah. That would make it doubly weird, wouldn't
well,
it?
Well, you know, I wanted, to be honest, I enjoyed the three-day week, but, you know, he probably didn't want to talk about that. But anyway, so the fact is, I did it. I was like, done. I can say I've seen a Prime Minister's cock.
Not nice.
And I've dined out on that and provided 4 to 5 seconds of amusement at least 3 dinner parties.
I don't go to dinner parties. No one goes to dinner parties.
I've had the odd dinner and my mates have been there.
The closest you'll get is someone does a big chilli in it. That's the closest you'll get to a dinner party now in the 21st century. Big chilli, everyone's on their fucking phone.
Chips and dips.
Yeah.
Yes, so so no one really knows, okay? So obviously, in the immediate aftermath, the obvious thing, most people go, oh, it's a sabotage.
Yeah.
Most likely reason is a bomb. And it's quite understandable because, you know, over the period of its time it was flying, it had lots of people did say they were going to bomb it. They had lots of people saying they're going to sabotage it. And before the final flight, there were letters to the Zeppelin company saying we're going to do something to it. So obviously, it's the obvious thing.
Okay.
But there was never really any evidence of it. But over the years, a couple of theories did get proposed. Now, some reckon that there was a passenger, a guy called Joseph Spar, who was an acrobat. Now, he brought a dog with him.
Right.
Called Ula. Now, that dog was a surprise for his children who were in America. Now, the dog didn't survive the crash, by the way. The dog died. So it seems very unfair.
Yeah.
The dog didn't choose to go on the Hindenburg.
No.
He reportedly made a number of unaccompanied visits to feed his dog during the flight. So the idea being the dog was obviously kept in a freight room away from the passengers. So he would disappear. And they reckon... I do think this is a bit ludicrous, but because he was an acrobat, when he was away from the passengers, he could have easily climbed into the airship's rigging to plant a bomb.
In a leotard?
Yeah.
That is bollocks.
Isn't
it? And I'll tell you why that's bollocks, right? Someone comes up to you and says, we want you to blow up the airship. Right, okay, yeah, I'm an acrobat, and that's part of what I do. How are we going to do that? So obviously when it's docked, I'll nip on, put the bomb on, and then I'll... No, we want you to be on the flight. You want to be on it, do you? Yeah, we want to be on. You want to be in the gas balloon? Yeah. And set off a bomb while I'm in the gas balloon. Yeah. We got you to do that. All right, okay. So I'm going to be incinerated. Possibly. But you're an acrobat. You'll probably be all right. Okay. So, we'll get it done straight away. No. Have a good meal. Have a few drinks. You know, make a week of it. And then just as it's docking, then you can set off your bomb, all right? And then be incinerated to death. Brilliant. Can I bring your dog? Yes, you can. That's absolute bullshit.
Isn't it? Well, he survived as well. Funny enough, because he was an acrobat, he managed to jump off the airship as it was crashing and he was trained in landing from jumps.
You're kidding
me.
No,
so he survived.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a piss take, isn't it? Not only did he manage to survive, did a couple of arabesques as he came out.
Yeah.
Takes the piss, doesn't it?
No one got that on footage, which is a shame.
That is a shame, isn't it?
So you've got the acrobat guy.
Right.
In the 60s, there was a guy called A.A. Hewling who published a book called Who Destroyed the Hindenburg, and he named a crew member called Eric Spiel as a suspect. But the problem is poor old Eric died in the crash, so we'll never know.
Well, why do you think it was him?
Well,
didn't like the look of him.
lots of reasons that I didn't make notes on.
Was he like an anti-Nazi?
Oh, I think he was anti-Nazi, yeah. There was a few. Well, actually, funny enough, the acrobat was apparently allegedly telling anti-Nazi jokes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as well. So that might have been a reason. But the thing about that guy is that 10 years later, another book identified him as the saboteur, and that got made into that dodgy 70s film called The Hindenburg.
It's not great, that film, is it?
Not great, no.
I don't like it very much.
No.
I've got to be honest.
And the first bloke who claimed it was this Eric Spiel sued the second bloke who ended up making the film for stealing his idea, but he lost because the film claimed it was historical fact, and you cannot claim ownership over historical facts. Of course, it wasn't historical fact. It's hypothesis.
Anyway, yeah. So, what are the other hypotheses?
The static spark hypothesis.
Love this one.
Sounds like an album.
No, I would definitely listen to the static. That's prog, isn't
that
it?
That is prog. Yeah, yeah. In fact, they all are. They all prog albums. The static spark hypothesis, the lightning hypothesis, the engine failure hypothesis. They won't be as successful.
Engine failure hypothesis. That band has jumped the shark, haven't they? They're all 65. Oh, no, we're very excited. No, we've got a new album coming out. Oh, have you, Dave? Play the hits.
Right, static spark hypothesis. The fire was started by an electrical spark, which was caused by a build-up of static electricity on the airship.
Right.
The spark was then ignited by a small amount of leaking hydrogen going through the outskin of the airship. Now, seems plausible, and let me explain why. In order to make up for the delay of more than 12 hours on this transatlantic flight, because of storms, remember we said it had to cruise around New York for a bit, so it was behind time.
Yeah.
But what it did have to do is it did have to pass through a number of weather fronts on its journey, so other storms, you know, electrical high discharge.
So it was literally like rubbing a balloon on your jumper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So here's the science, right? So although the mooring lines were not wet when they first hit the ground, and the ignition took 4 minutes later, the theory goes that when those mooring lines became wet, they would have grounded the frame of the airship but not the skin. So this would have caused a sudden potential difference between the skin and the frame and would set off an electrical discharge or a spark.
Yeah.
And a spark will always try and find its quickest way to the ground, so it would have just jumped from the skin onto the metal framework, igniting any leaking oxygen.
That sounds perfectly, yeah.
Now, there are lots of variations on this hypothesis, right? But they're all like really, really sciencey, and I don't understand them.
Fair enough.
So for the purpose of this podcast, let's just call this a static spark hypothesis and be done with it.
It seems to me like that seems very plausible.
Yes.
They went through it. It's a big balloon. Mm. We all know what happens with balloons and that, right? It's gone through a thunderstorm, and then they've put a line down connecting it to the ground, and that's caused some sort of like combustible thing. It feels like something that's very, very happenable.
It seems more likely than an anti-Nazi going off to feed his dog.
It feels more, it does feel more likely than an acrobatic Nazi trying to feed his dog bomb. But it's not as great as the film, is it? It's not good in the film.
It's sciencey, it's not as interesting.
Not as interesting.
It's complex. Not as interesting if it's complex. All right, on a similar vein, the lightning hypothesis.
Yeah.
Right, so like many aircraft, the Hindenburg had been struck by lightning several times in the first year of its operation. Okay, now that in itself wouldn't normally ignite a fire in a hydrogen-filled airship due to a lack of oxygen. However, airship fires have been observed when lightning strikes a vehicle as it vents hydrogen to lower it. Do you see? So the vented hydrogen would mix with the oxygen in the atmosphere, which creates a combustible mixture because you need the hydrogen and the oxygen together.
So it would have to be like a really bad, it would have to be really bad luck. So it would have to like vent a bit of hydrogen into the oxygen, then get struck by lightning.
Yeah.
But that's bollocks, isn't it? Because if it got struck by lightning, then people would have gone, oh, it got struck by lightning. Because it's really obvious when something gets struck by lightning.
And there were no lightning storms as it made its final appearance.
So that's bollocks.
So that's cobblers. Engine failure hypothesis, your favourite band.
Okay.
Ground crew member Robert Buchanan said that he noted one of the two engines thrown into reverse for a hard turn backfired and a shower of sparks was emitted. So the airship's outer skin was ignited by the engine sparks.
Interesting.
But the theory has been rejected. because the exhaust temperature is too low to ignite the hydrogen. The ignition temperature for hydrogen is 500 degrees centigrade, but the sparks from an exhaust would only reach 250 degrees centigrade. The Zeppelin company also carried out extensive tests on this, and the hydrogen never ignited.
You see, if I was going to build a big old balloon and fill it with a big scary gas, I would make sure that the engines didn't burn through the skin and blow it up.
Yeah, you would make sure the engines were not essentially four cigarette lighters on the side.
That's the first thing I would write on my whiteboard of, like, shall we build a big airship? Yeah. Let's make sure that its engines don't blow it up.
You'd have been number two or number three shouting that in a brainstorm around
Absolutely.
The conference
Can
table.
Can we make
you?
Sure...
In your Regus, hideout Regus room.
Yeah, that's right, in your Regus business suite. You'd be like, can we make sure that turning it on doesn't kill everybody? So, yeah, that's bullshit.
Okay, my favourite one in terms of name, the Incendiary Paint Hypothesis.
Excellent.
Now that is a band. Right, the proponents of this hypothesis, or ludicrous theory, argue that the coatings of the fabric of the airship, so you know, the outer skin that goes around the framework, contain both iron oxide and an aluminium impregnated cellulose called CAB. Right. Now those two things together remain potentially reactive even when they fully set.
Self-igniting paint.
Essentially, yeah. But in 1996, a retired NASA scientist, and you know that if you chuck NASA into anything, you sit up and listen. Because he's NASA.
NASA.
So when you see those little supplements that come in Sunday papers, and you go, I can get this great pen, or you can get these good old slippers. They were developed off the back of something NASA did. You
Definitely.
Go, they're going to be good.
Gonna
right,
be good.
So this NASA bloke, he's a retired scientist, Addison Bain.
Right.
He received permission from the German government to search their archives and discovered evidence, this is interesting, that during the Nazi regime, German scientists concluded that the paint on the Hindenburg skin was the cause of it.
Oh, so they thought it was the paint.
Yeah.
Germans thought it was the paint.
And this NASA scientist, he interviewed the wife of the investigation's lead scientist at the time, Max Dyckman.
Yeah.
And she stated her husband told her about the paint and instructed her not to tell anyone because it would have embarrassed the Nazi government. So, maybe not as ludicrous. But then the TV show Mythbusters came along.
Love Mythbusters.
Yeah, exactly. And they explored this, and their findings indicated that aluminium and iron oxide ratios in the Hindenburg skin, while certainly flammable, were not enough on their own to destroy the Zeppelin. So what do you believe, ex-NASA scientist or Mythbusters?
But ex-NASA scientist, all he did was go to
someone's
Germany,
wife.
Look at a file, and then talk to an old woman.
Yeah.
Mythbusters, I mean, Mythbusters isn't exactly the greatest source in the world, is it? Really? And also, if it was the paint, then why didn't other big airships all blow up in that if the paint could do that?
And none of them did.
None of them did, ever.
So I think paint is bollocks.
And also, paint has never done that ever.
No.
No one's ever painted a table and then it's burst into flames and because of the paint. Paint just doesn't do that.
No. It's cobblers, isn't it?
And I think for the first time for paint to do that, it would be very bad luck that it's done it in a balloon filled with hydrogen. Okay, well, that seems also bollocks, I've got to be honest.
I think it's bollocks. So let's move on to the final one, the hydrogen hypothesis. The theory that hydrogen was ignited by a static spark.
Yeah.
Not too massively dissimilar to the static electricity one we had before, but in this case you've got slightly leaking hydrogen. What caused the leaking hydrogen? Could have been the structure piercing a gas cell, gas valve could have been let open. We don't know, but hydrogen leaks, I mean,
relatively good, didn't it? I mean, that bloke saw some hydrogen leaking out, didn't he?
He sort of rippled, didn't he? So it could have been that. Could have easily been hydrogen leaking, spark, bang, gone.
And I tell you what, it could have been a spark as well because they had a
smoking room. Well, I'll tell you about the smoking room, Phil. The Hindenburg did have a smoker's lounge, which is bizarre when you consider how much hydrogen was sitting above them, 7 million cubic feet.
Yeah.
But they couldn't bring their own lighters or matches on board.
Yeah, because that would be mad.
That would be ludicrous.
Yeah.
Couldn't do that because of all the hydrogen. But what they did do is they had a room which was pressurised to prevent any hydrogen from leaking.
Yeah.
So a steward would admit passengers through a double door airlock into this smoker's lounge, and there was one electric lighter there, and they made sure that no one lit anything with anything but this single electric lighter.
It's just,
and you could buy cigarettes and Cuban cigars on board.
It's just so open to going wrong, isn't it? Mm. It's so, like, if you have a thing where you have to go through a sealed airlock to be able to do the thing, then just don't do the thing. Mm. Like, it's not like life or death, is it, smoking?
Well, it was in those days. Everyone smoked.
Well, how long can you go?
3 days you would have gone from Frankfurt to Germany without a fag. I've done 3 days on top of a mountain in Czechoslovakia or Czech Republic without vaping, and it did, oh my God.
Yeah, but when you did 3 days up a mountain in Czechoslovakia, if you light a fag, Czechoslovakia doesn't explode. Like, if someone said to you, if you have a fag, the whole of this mountain's going to go up, you'd hold on, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you hold on? I mean, I'm not a smoker, but I mean, have a bit of common sense.
I don't think you know how nice the feeling of smoke in the back of your throat is. You take risks.
I don't know.
Anyway, it's all cobblers. I'll tell you why it's cobblers, because the fire didn't start where the smoking lounge was.
Oh,
if it was that,
yeah,
the first
true.
Flames would have come from there, and they didn't.
So it's actually fine.
So it's actually fine. Yeah. Talking about that, weird things on the Hindenburg. It actually had a lightweight piano as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was made to meet... Obviously, there's only so much it could lift.
Yeah.
It was made of aluminium and coloured in yellow pigskin and weighed less than 400 pounds.
It was an aluminium and pigskin piano in the sky.
Yeah. Right, so you've had all your hypotheses there, Phil. Which one do you think it is?
The one that isn't bollocks. it's going to be the Sparky static electricity one.
I think you're right.
But in the end, does it really matter? It doesn't matter, because usually when they pick over the bones of these things, it's to stop it happening again.
Mm.
And I think the overall opinion that fuck this is the best outcome for big zeppelins. I know you like them.
Love them.
But they're mad, and you're mad. I think that's something that's very important to remember, Phil. I know it's difficult for you to understand, but you're not a normal man. Right, that was the Hindenburg, a really horrible one, I think, to start with. Mind you, they're all going to be horrible.
Well, they're not going to be great, are they? We have pitched this as a podcast about disasters.
So that's so quite horrible. I think mainly horrible because of the incendiary aspect of the Hindenburg. God's fault or our fault?
I think ultimately, if we're saying it sparks, and it's God's fault.
Oh, you think it's God's fault?
Oh, well, what do you think?
I'm going to go our fault.
Why?
Because why build it? Look, don't build it.
Yeah, but could it be...
It's going to blow up.
Yeah, but could it be God's fault? Oh, I see what you mean.
I think if you invent a kick-me-in-the-balls machine, you turn it on and it kicks you in the balls, that's your fault.
Yeah, I'm sold on that.
Right. Thank you very much for listening to the very first Crash Bang Wallop podcast. That was the Hindenburg. Do you enjoy it, Phil?
I loved it. That's right up my Lenny Kravitz, that.
We've started with one that is really sort of your level of expertise.
Loved
it. Next time, in 2 weeks' time, what are we doing?
Pompeii!
That is also people being burned to death.
Flamey death and ash.
Another flamey death one, but considerably higher death toll, I should imagine.
And there's a lot we can talk about sex.
That's very sexy, Pompeii.
Romans bloody loved it.
Definitely. Well, I'm looking forward to that. So thanks very much for listening to this. And we will see you in 2 weeks with Pompeii.
Bye.